I'd like to say something.
Well, Neville, I'm sure we'd all be fascinated to hear what you have to say.
You know how in the last Harry Potter, everybody's spent years thinking that Neville Longbottom is just kind of this funny, inconsequential character? You might not even know his name. But then he ends up using the sword of Gryffindor to destroy the final Horcrux, the big snake thing, and kinda is like one of the biggest heroes in defeating Voldemort.
I never know what you're gonna say, but yes, I know that scene and that plot very well.
Do you think Novavax could be the Neville Longbottom of the vaccine world?
Novavax could be the Neville Longbottom of that vaccine world, yes.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch, and today...
Gryffindor!
I feel so sorry for listeners who don't know Harry Potter, but I'm glad they're still with us, maybe.
I'm talking with Sarah Overmall. Not just about Harry Potter, but about vaccines. From Novavax to Pfizer to Sputnik, how effective they are, where they're approved, and what roles they might play in the global fight to end the pandemic. So, Sarah, you are not just here to talk about Harry Potter and the wonderful world of wizardry with me, but also to walk me through the wonderful world of vaccinations. And I want to just go through each of them here with you to learn not just what the vaccines are and like how effective they are and everything, but also what role each of them is going to play or is playing here in the U.S. and also abroad, especially considering some of the large and scary outbreaks like we're seeing in India, concern about variants. Does that sound cool to you?
Absolutely. And if I'd known that this was going to be a Harry Potter kickoff, I would have gotten my metaphors ready, but I think I have one to start with.
All right, let's do it. Well, first off, the most obvious, maybe you would have thought the same for this. I feel like probably the Harry Potter of the vaccine world, if you will.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Pfizer.
I'm a what?
A wizard and a thumping good one, I'd wager.
Quickly emerged as the main character among vaccines first approved in the U.S. Tell me what I need to know about how Pfizer is operating in the real world.
Yeah, definitely the Harry Potter with Moderna and Johnson & Johnson rounding out as Ron and Hermione, but we'll get to them. So Pfizer was first authorized in the U.S., and it was on a new technology called messenger RNA, which is this cool thing that had never really been proven to work before in trials. But as we all now know, the Pfizer vaccine is 95% effective against the broad coronavirus and 100% effective against severe coronavirus that hospitalizes people, that causes, you know, these really damaging side effects, which, by the way, the next two are going to talk about same thing on the 100%. Mm-hmm. But one other thing about Pfizer that's important to know is that their vaccine has to be stored at ultra cold freezer temperatures. And so logistically, there are some advantages to the other ones, just in terms of getting vaccines to different areas, and especially as we move into perhaps a more fragmented distribution of, your standard doctor's office doing this, or maybe mobile clinics doing this, you might see Pfizer less in those scenarios.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like right now I know a lot of people who have gotten Pfizer. I mean, you know, especially in the U.S. Is it similar in the rest of the world, like in Europe or other places, or is Pfizer more of like a U.S. thing?
Yeah, not quite similar, because Pfizer has not done a lot of deals globally just yet. Hmm. They also have only pledged 40 million shots so far to this global vaccine equity effort known as the COVAX facility. And that is the engine where especially a lot of low-income countries are going to be getting vaccines from.
Hmm. All right, next up, Moderna. Hermione, right?
Yeah, she's Hermione.
You're saying it wrong. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
All right, tell me about her.
Well, same thing with the messenger RNA technology that was used by Pfizer, and really basically comparable results. 94% effective against broad infection, 100% effective against severe infection. Mm-hmm. And they use a standard freezer, so a little bit different. There's more logistical ease in getting them out to different areas. I, for instance, talked to Healthcare for the Homeless in Baltimore about the vaccines that they were using, and they had been using J&J up to the pause and Moderna, but not Pfizer because of the freezer method. Mm. So, for instance, that's an example of how, you know, the logistical things matter in these moments. Uh-huh. Another thing about Moderna is that this is the first product they've ever brought to market. They have had a lot of government assistance to do that, but this also is kind of a validation of the technology that they're using, this messenger RNA platform.
The Hermione analogy really works. Like, you know, kind of overachiever, doesn't need the freezer, is going to be putting a lot of work in, and also first in its family to become a wizard, right?
Oh my God. That works so well. Wow, this is really going.
All right, next one works really well too. So J&J, kind of our Ron Weasley, definitely one of the main three here in the U.S., has had a couple bumps along the way, but ultimately still really central and important, right?
Yeah, a couple of bumps, but has its own unique advantages, just like Ron.
Yeah, I'm still here.
I think that last time we spoke, I had just gotten the Johnson & Johnson vaccine,
yeah,
and the federal government had paused use of it,
yeah,
while they investigated blood clots. Use has resumed again. Mm-hmm. There are distinct advantages to having a single-dose shot that only has to be refrigerated. Also, Johnson & Johnson has pledged far more vaccines to global initiatives like COVAX than Pfizer or Moderna, which hasn't pledged any to COVAX so far. So Johnson & Johnson has not been written off on global distribution for sure. It remains to be seen how much it will factor back into the U.S. numbers, but I do think it'll still be there. They're distributing it to states already again, and there are going to be people who still see an advantage in a single-dose shot.
All right, let's talk about the other two vaccines that aren't approved for use yet in the U.S., but are being studied for how effective they are here. First off, our come-from-behind hero, our Neville.
Neville, would you join me, please?
Novavax. I honestly hadn't really thought or heard much about this vaccine until I read your story. But tell me why it's important.
Yeah, well, it is also, like Moderna, coming from a small company that has not brought a product to market before. This is a Maryland-based company that has been studying for years now how to use essentially bug cells to develop the viruses and inject them and have your body learn how to respond to a virus. So that's how that vaccine works.
Wait, you said bug cells?
Bug cells, literally bug cells. Yeah, they're using moth cells, but this bug cell approach has been used in other vaccines before. So we know that it works with other bug cells. They have a kind of unique technology where they also have these little nanoparticles that go in to give your body instructions about what it should do. So it's an interesting technology, and they have some really good results, especially for a sort of dark horse coming from behind, more than 90% effective broadly. And they also have a little bit more logistical ease than, say, something like Pfizer. Also, they have donated or pledged to donate many, many vaccines globally.
All right. Next up is AstraZeneca, one we've talked a lot about before. I'm trying to think of a Harry Potter analogy, like maybe Draco Malfoy.
Famous Harry Potter. Can't even go into a bookshop without making the front page.
You know, like Slytherin sort of has the image problems that have gone along with, you know, like being shut down in Europe for a while. It still doesn't have approval in the U.S. But, you know, in the end, Draco is still an important part in the fight for good in the wizarding world. Like, does that sound right?
Yeah. Like maybe a little bit misunderstood. We get to learn more about Draco. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with AstraZeneca, like you said, it has had its stumbles, both in terms of these blood clot concerns, similar to the ones with Johnson & Johnson, and some frustrations with the government over some questions about their data, which has led them to lag on filing. They thought they were going to file with the U.S., for instance, by mid-April. They obviously haven't. And we don't know yet when they're going to do that. And now they've been kicked out of a manufacturing facility for Johnson & Johnson to use it. So there's problems there, too, about when they could get production back online. Mm-hmm. But like Novavax, they have donated many doses to the COVAX facility in other countries, and they are still widely being used in other countries. Despite the blood clot concerns that led to some pauses last month, there are at least 50 countries that have authorized their vaccine for use.
Let's move on to the other vaccines that are not just not approved in the U.S., but they're also not being studied in the U.S. in clinical trials. The first of those is the Sputnik vaccine from Russia. Technically, the first COVID vaccine, right?
Technically the first, although we didn't really have any data at that point. And there were a lot of criticisms globally of whether Russia was moving too fast to declare a sort of victory, because there is a political aspect to which country gets this done first. Mm-hmm. And so we've since learned from an article published in a medical journal that it is more than 90% effective. Hmm. Yet there are still questions. For instance, Brazil this week actually rejected getting Sputnik vaccines imported to their country, even though they are dealing with a surge in coronavirus cases and need vaccines. But they said that they still have questions about the safety and manufacturing. It's kind of behind a curtain, and we don't have as much clarity about what they're doing as maybe some other manufacturers.
Okay. There are also two COVID vaccines developed in China that I feel we don't really know the effectiveness of, right?
Yeah, we don't really know the effectiveness of these two. And these ones are really interesting because we have even less information about them maybe than we do about Sputnik. Hmm. So one of the vaccines is made by Sinopharm, and it has not made data publicly available, but the company itself has said that it's roughly 79% effective in a trial in December. And then there's Sinovac, which also doesn't have publicly available data, but it's been sent to Chile and Brazil, where it's between 50 and 56% effective, according to data that's been compiled there. So not as effective maybe as some of the others, and we don't really have answers yet on, say, how effective it is against severe disease, which is obviously probably the most important thing. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, millions of these doses have been sent to other countries right now.
Can I ask a weird question? Like, if one of these vaccines isn't that effective, is it feasible that there could be a situation where some people have taken one vaccine that isn't as effective and then they're able to take another? Like, are there risks for that? Is that something that could happen?
No, it's totally feasible. And there aren't really risks to it, although obviously it's going to be studied more. But the reason especially that it's quite feasible is that people are preparing for the idea that we could get booster shots, or that we could find out in a year or year and a half that our immunity is beginning to fade. Some of these vaccines could work especially well as booster shots, and some of the other ones might fade. But that also, you bring up a good point there, that also validates why there's still others in the vaccine race that haven't been approved or haven't finished their trials. We have things like Germany's CureVac, which is still going through its phase three trials right now. GSK and Sanofi, two European companies that have been in the vaccine space for a very long time, are still working on multiple different trials, even though there are several authorized vaccines. And then you even have these weird sort of like one-offs where there's like a tobacco company that's literally researching a vaccine.
Huh.
Yeah.
Sarah Overmall, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Also, today, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says President Biden will likely invite members of Congress to the White House next week for bipartisan meetings on his sprawling infrastructure and social welfare proposals that he touted during his joint address before Congress last night. Together, Biden's American Jobs Plan and American Families Plan would constitute roughly $4 trillion in new federal spending over the next decade, financed by a combination of tax hikes for corporations and the wealthiest Americans. Congressional Republicans have balked at the proposed changes to the tax code, while also taking issue with the White House's definition of infrastructure, which they criticize as overly broad. And the Justice Department is sharply escalating its investigation into former President Trump's longtime confidant and lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. On Wednesday, the DOJ executed search warrants at his Manhattan home as part of a long-running probe into Giuliani's dealings with a shadowy cast of characters in Ukraine during Trump's presidency. According to a person familiar with the move, the FBI also went to the home of another attorney who had dealings with Ukrainians and remains close to Giuliani and Trump. The raids mark a highly unusual intrusion into a former president's inner circle. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing and want to help us out, you can leave us a rating and review. And more importantly, tell a friend to check out the show. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.